All right, Callahan and Torty back for hour number two of This Week in Pro Football. 97.5 The Fanatic here at the Parks Casino Sportsbook in Ben Salem, PA. Joey T, every week. Every week the tides shift here. Rank these three for me real quick here, okay, before we get to Gary. Real quick. The 2012 draft team. This is quarterbacks. Wilson, Luck, Cousins, Foles, RG3, Tannehill. You mentioned Tannehill's coming on strong, right?
Yep.
Then you got 2017, Mahomes, Trubisky, Watson. And then the 2018 class, Mayfield, Darnold, Rosen, and Lamar Jackson. Rank them for me. Which one was the most successful draft class this week?
All right, so 2017 was the Mahomes-Watson class.
Yeah, and, man, don't forget Mitchell T.
T. All right, so that's the best.
All right.
2012, next.
Russell, Andrew Luck, Cousins, Foles, RG3, Tannehill, and then you.
And then 2018 is bringing up the rear for me. How would you rank those?
I'd say probably close to that because Darnold and Rosen really haven't done anything. But Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, not a bad class.
Well, yeah, let's pump the brakes on Baker Mayfield here really quickly. But yes, overall not a bad class.
That's funny. That's shipped every week, but some great quarterback classes. All right, how about we get to a great linebacker and a veteran of the National Football League about to talk about the Eagles matchup and about the NFL. It's former Eagle linebacker Gary Cobb, who also co-hosts the Fox 29 Eagles pregame live and the G. Cobb Birds Report weekly podcast presented exclusively by Parks Casino, backed by the number one casino in PA. You must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Good morning, Gary.
How you guys doing?
All right, Gary. When we talked a week ago, I remember you personally assured us that Philadelphia was going to beat Miami, and you let everybody down. So now...
Now, Gary,
the question is, Joe and I are debating. I say, Gary, that the Eagles cannot lose this game. I just don't think talent-wise they could even lose this game possibly. Joe says no. After last week, all bets are off. And where do you come down?
The Eagles could lose this game. I think, the thing about it is, if you look at some of the matchups, you know, for instance, Saquon Barkley against the Eagles linebackers. Now, the thing about Eli's playing now and not the kid. So Eli's going to get the ball out of his hands. He's going to take those check down throws to Saquon Barkley. And if he gets the ball in his hands, you know, this guy can make things happen. Plus, you got Golden Tate is probably going to come back. He'll be in the slot. He'll be running option routes against Avante Maddox or Craven LeBlanc in the slot. And you better believe that he and Eli, they know how to execute on third down. So I'm not sure the Eagles are going to win this game. They should win it. You know, I mean, they got to play poorly in order to lose this game. But we saw last week they can play poorly. And I know Eli is going to throw the ball up. So there are going to be 50-50 balls this week like they were last week. So there's no guarantee the Eagles are going to win this game.
Gary, we've been talking about what Doug Peterson has said in his press conferences, and Pat's laid out a couple of things, but the one that stood out to me was he talked about the Dolphins being a good football team and the Eagles still being a good football team. When you hear that, you know, what was your reaction when you heard him address both teams that way?
Well, I know what he's talking about, which is he's seen on tape, you know, with Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know how he can get on these runs. I mean, he can get into a rhythm, and, you know, if you were just to look at those plays that you saw, you say, man, this guy may be one of the best quarterbacks in the league. How he can be accurate, and he can get into a rhythm where he is picking you apart, and he's done this with some of the best defenses in the league. Now, he normally doesn't play like that, and the Dolphins have all these issues and things, but they are capable of playing great football, and we know that's true with Eli. Now, Eli can stink up the joint, but there are times Eli has cut the Eagles up, you know, like he has a machete in his hand. So we know that he's capable of it. And if you look at all of the weapons they got, Evan Engram is a talented young tight end. Golden Tate has had success in the league, and he can still run, and he can run those short routes. Saquon Barkley, we know he's as talented as any running back in the league. So they can make plays, and if the Eagles don't show up and jump on them right away and shut them down, we could be sitting there, you know, with our thumbs in our mouth looking stupid again, you know, where everybody's going, I can't believe this has happened.
I mean, this is a team.
We know it could happen. So that's what He's talking about the opponent they're playing when they play at their best. Now, normally these teams don't play at their best, so we know they got horrible records and everything. But we've seen throughout the league that you can lose to a bad team if you don't show up ready to play. And I don't like what I heard about, with the Eagles, with, you know, they had the padded practice, and some of the guys didn't like the fact that they had a padded practice, and the coaches didn't consult with them before having a padded practice. Big deal. They should have padded practice every day the way they've been playing. Eagles players don't have anything to cry about. And then they go up there and give them a paddle. Act like little babies, you know, crying about that as bad as they play. So anyway, don't let me get going on that.
I bet that. I appreciate that insight, Gary. That's very informative that you brought that up. I was going to... Let me just parry that and say that I had mentioned to Joe at the end of the first hour here that what the Eagles desperately need is a play. I think they need a 78-yard punt return or an interception to the house, something dramatic that I think would galvanize or relax the entire sideline.
Now look at the Miami game, though. They're up 28-14. They gotta play the whole game, see? They can't be thinking just one play because, I'm telling you, Eli, if there's any pressure on him, you know he's going to throw the ball away and jump on the ground and all that. But he knows the coverages. He knows where to go with the ball. And if they just mess around and let him get into a rhythm, you know, the Giants can get on a roll because we've seen Eli do this to the Eagles. So I don't think it's just one play. I think they got to play the entire game or at least until the game is – totally secure, because I thought last week, you know, that drop by Zach Ertz really hurt, because I thought if they scored one more time, the Dolphins were going to, you know, hang it up, but they didn't do that.
Gary, looking ahead at this one, defensively, the Eagles are slowly but surely getting a little bit healthier. Cravon LeBlanc coming back, and we've been talking about the Eagles' defensive line. You talked about the weapons that the Giants have, but what's the state of the Eagles' defense as it stands, even after giving up those five touchdowns in a row or whatever it was to the Dolphins?
Well, you know, I think the Eagles are capable of playing good defense, but I'll be honest with you, you know, I would have gotten rid of Corey Unley. I got to get him out of there. I mean, their cornerbacks haven't played aggressively the whole time he's been here. They lose their confidence. They start playing scared like they did last week, where you got Jalen Mills out there just watching people catch the ball. You know, I would want to get the whole thing changed with the mentality. So I don't think that they're a great defense where we can just be so assured they're going to show up and play well. I think the cornerbacks have been inconsistent since they've been here. And I hope that they play well on Monday night, but I don't think you can rest assured of that. I do think the defensive line has got to get pressure on Eli, and maybe Eli gets to the point where he says, you know what, I'm getting ready to retire. I can't get injured.
That's correct.
I'm just going to, you know, get on the ground. So hopefully that happens. But I don't have confidence in those corners because if they get beat one time, they really kind of tuck their feathers in and they're just sitting out there like a victim, like they have a big target on their back. And I just don't think they play confident and play like competent corners all the time. They, like I said, Corey Unlin would not be coaching my secondary because I haven't seen any of those guys get better as they've gone through the year.
All right, we're talking with Gary Cobb, who co-hosts the Fox 29 Eagles pregame live and the G. Cobb Birds Report weekly podcast. Gary, I want to go outside the Eagles for just one question I have for you, because it's a team that fascinates me, and you being a veteran player who's been in many a locker room of both good teams and bad teams. The Seattle Seahawks are 9-1 this season in one-score games. What is it about that team, in your opinion, and what is it in a locker room? This is a team that lost a lot of leaders. No more Richard Sherman. No more guys like that. Earl Thomas is gone. What is it about a culture that enables them to consistently win these type of tight games?
Well, you know, this is a great question because of when you compare it to the Eagles. It's not a matter of what is it. It's a matter of who is it. And the who is Russell Wilson. The Seattle Seahawks believe in Russell Wilson. And it starts with the fact that Russell Wilson believes in himself, first of all. He's confident. He always thinks something's going to happen. Now, think about this guy, Russell Wilson. He might have thrown the most costly interception in the history of the NFL. You think about the interception he threw.
Yep. Yep.
But you would never know it if you got around him and you saw how confident he is. And that confidence rubs off on everybody else. And even though they're not these, I think their record is better than they are. But because they believe in Russell and they believe something good's going to happen and he sells it to the whole team, they think something good's going to happen even if they're not playing well. But it's late in the game and Russell Wilson's got the ball. Those guys, every guy wearing a Seahawks uniform, is sure they're going to win. And they play like that. And, you know, this is some things that Carson can learn from. First of all, he's got to have confidence in himself. And he's got to be, you know, that way all the time. And the guy's got to believe in him. And when you have that, you win games that you shouldn't win. And that's what Seattle has done. And that's why they're going to be dangerous all the way. Because you get in a close game. And you know, they're going to score points because Russell creates plays. So I think that Russell Wilson is the key. And as I said, Carson could learn a lot from that. Because if he'd have dwelled on that interception he threw, he'd be walking around with, you know, with his tail between his legs. But yeah. you would never knew he threw that interception.
That's right. That's right. That's good insight into that. I mean, and you're right when you draw the analogy between Seattle and Philadelphia. It's not too late. Not too late for the Eagles to get it sorted out. But we'll see. But, all right, Gary, tell us what's on the GCOP Birds Report Weekly podcast this week, and where can everybody find it?
Okay, of course, you know, some of the things I've been talking about here, we get into this, which is some of the matchups, of course, we're going to see against the Giants, what the Eagles need to do, and you can find it on Apple Podcasts and Google Play. But, you know, there's always a game within a game, and you got the battle between the coordinators. You're going to see that on Monday night. We get into that, and we get into the battle, of course, between the quarterbacks and, you know, how Eli, he would love to go out. He would love to go out, you know, with a great performance on Monday night. And who knows? Eli, if he had a great game, he might wind up somewhere else next year. Who knows? But I think the Eagles, the big thing they got to do is we talk about, you know, how they got to jump out and come out fast, and they got to play a complete game. And you can check it out. If you're a big football fan and you want to get into the Eagles, we get into it all. So Apple Podcasts and Google Play. It's GCOP Birds Report, and we'd love to have you check it out because we have fun talking football, and we love football, and other people that love football enjoy the podcast.
All right, Gary, check it out. Everybody do that, and we'll see how your guarantee of an Eagles win checks out for next week.
There you go.
All right, Gary, appreciate it very much, and we'll talk to you next Saturday, all right?
Hey, sounds good. You guys have a great day.
All right, thanks, Gary. You too.
All right, Gary Cobb checking in. All right, talking about Seattle, if I may be so bold, Joey T. The play I would select is the play that most identifies the Seattle Seahawks, and it's really a shame. It's Malcolm Butler's interception, would you
really?
Say? Now, there's one other one.
Marshawn Lynch.
There you go. The Marshawn Lynch.
That's mine.
Yeah. All right. Well, yours is pro. Mine, as usual, is con.
It's con.
I always see the glasses being not only half empty, it's bone dry. But you
remember in the top plays in Super Bowl history, for me, that's number one. The Malcolm Butler interception is the best play in Super Bowl history. Literally won the game.
Yeah, and it's true. And yet... Yeah, Gary's right. A guy like Russell Wilson, he threw that ball and just, you know, ended the Super Bowl, and yet he just, he has the ability to forget about it. Of course, they didn't have any other games after that season, but still. Seattle has scored 36 more points than they've given up this year, and they're 10-2. Now, can you imagine that? That is a team that just, when push comes to shove, you saw it Monday night, right?
Yes.
You knew that Seattle was going to win that game, didn't you?
Two advantages they have, right? Russell Wilson, he talked about. Pete Carroll, he didn't talk about much. And I think that Pete Carroll, he's not the best coach in the NFL, but if you have Pete Carroll.
I'm with you on that. I think he's, yeah. I think he's one of the most underrated coaches
really
in the league,
underrated.
Joe. You're right. Yes. And because he stuck out in that, you know, that's not exactly a media center, Seattle.
No.
But you are certainly right about that. Another guy fired by the New York Jets.
Of course. Yeah. And their long story, and the Patriots, though.
Oh, that's true, too. That's true, too. So, all right, but listen, we're at 610-632-0975. I'd love to get people's input as to, I mean, I'm not saying this game's a lock, but I mean, this has got to be the get rightiest of all the get right games here. So, but
if you can't beat the team trying to lose, what are you
doing? I mean, eight straight losses, and now they're bringing back Eli, who just, Eli, come on, you got to come play now. I'm sure he's like, oh my God.
I was getting ready to do SNL. What are you talking about? I have to come play.
Yeah. So, I think there's, but, yeah, we'll see. And then lots of good seats available, so. Eagle fans are being very, very suspicious right now. How about, Joe, we do a little three-quarter poll?
Yes.
All right. And why don't you tell me who your MVP is at the three-quarter?
Lamar. Yeah. Lamar Jackson is the three-quarter poll MVP. He's also going to be the full quarter poll MVP.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess there's really no arguing that. He's going to get it. Russell has had a heck. We just got done talking about him.
Really,
he's had a heck of a run here for Seattle. Christian McCaffrey was in the talk until Carolina went and lost four straight. So I think that's yesterday's news now.
I think
it is Lamar's to lose. Coach of the year is
Sean McDermott, I think. I think that's been a big surprise. Nobody expected the Bills to literally do anything. I think Josh Allen has fewer tools than a guy like Lamar Jackson has. And they've made a lot out of not a lot out there in Buffalo. I think that Sean McDermott's going to get it. Or deserves it, at least at the three-quarter poll mark.
I would say yes to that. And I think if you're saying Lamar is going to be the MVP, then that obviously would take away points away from John Harbaugh as the coach of the year, because he's got the MVP.
Correct.
But I would just mention Harbaugh's name only because it was he who said, I know what this guy can do. And he revamped his entire offense on a dime to take advantage of what this guy brings to the table. He deserves credit for that. But I'm not going to argue the McDermott choice. San Francisco, Shanahan, they've had an incredibly easy schedule.
And now
it's turning around on them, and now they've lost two games, two of the last four. So, all right, how about the next coach to walk the green mile is...
I want to say Pat Shurmur, but the one thing that Pat Shurmur has is that he had the foresight to start Daniel Jones before it was too late, to say to your bosses, hey, I'm trying to make it work with your guy, we're trying to break in a young quarterback, etc., etc. There could be another coach, and I'll mention him if you don't, but I think that Pat Shurmur at the three-quarter poll is in trouble here.
I would say that, obviously you would think the answer is Jason Garrett. There's two guys. Jason Garrett, Doug Marrone are my two choices for the next coach to walk. Jason Garrett will not be the Cowboys coach in 2020 unless Dallas goes to the Super Bowl.
But he will be coaching in the NFL.
I'll be in the NFL. I don't think he'll be in the NFL. And he's not going to be in Dallas. And Doug Marrone, I said Tennessee was the most anonymous team in the NFL. That Jacksonville team is right with him, boy. Right with him. So,
back on the Gardner show, though.
And so,
the guy who didn't get mentioned, I only think coaches should be fired for two reasons. One, if they've lost the room, or two, if they're a distraction. I think Freddie Kitchen should be fired for what's going on in Cleveland.
You know what, Joe? I always hesitate to, Shurmur, I wouldn't fire Shurmur. He's been in 2 years, yes. They're utterly horrendous. I agree, but man, 2 years is just not a lot of time in this league. So
I agree. What do you think about Kitchens, though? The T-shirt?
No, the
obviously
T-shirt.
Not managing expectations.
4th and 9, draw play. I think you're certainly right. There's a body of evidence that says that Freddie Kitchens is overwhelmed in that job.
I'm going to switch. Right. I think I'm going to go to Freddie Kitchens instead of Pat Shirt.
All right.
You've talked me out of it.
All right.
Strong in my convictions.
All right, that's really good. And then, just tell me, your opinion, the biggest surprise so far in the NFL after the three-quarter poll. Could be team, could be development, whatever.
They're kind of related. The Eagles are the biggest surprise. The fact that the Eagles have not lived up to the expectations. And related, the NFC East has been garbage. When it looked like it was going to be a young, exciting division, you've got two rookie quarterbacks that could potentially light the world on fire. We've seen rookie quarterbacks succeeding in the past. And obviously, Dallas and Philadelphia. My singular biggest surprise is Philadelphia. But the NFC East could all be lumped in there.
Yeah, I guess you'd have to say that's true. I'd have to say that. I was trying to think of an angle to bring the Patriots into it because... New England's probably the weakest regarded 10-2 team in NFL history right now. But it's because their schedule's been so easy. But I'd have to agree with you. It's the NFC East that's been the biggest surprise, and it's really become an incompetent division.
It's terrible.
Really caught everybody by surprise. So, but anyway, that's the three-quarter poll here on This Week in Pro Football. We haven't gotten to the Eagles yet. I want to talk to McCormick at the bottom of this hour about this fantasy thing that came up for Michael Fabiano.
Players.
Yeah, about blocking players. I want to get all your opinions about that. And then we still have yet to identify the play that most encapsulates the Philadelphia Eagles.
Oh, I've got a couple of guesses for sure. Let's go to Wayne in Orlando next on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Wayne?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we doing today?
Hi, Wayne.
I just want to kind of talk about Monday. I know that, you know, we made some moves. You know, we brought Sonny Michel's brother to the fold. I know it's a little premature to throw him out there to the Wolves. But my only question to you guys is that, I mean, obviously what Doug Peterson's offense is sputtering. So why can't we use, being that Carson Wentz looks healthy, so why can't we add another wrinkle to the offense to kind of really throw a monkey wrench in this Giants defense, like utilizing the pistol? When he was offensive coordinator for the Chiefs, he ran the pistol with Alex Smith.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we got to have a Lamar Jackson-type quarterback. So why can't we do that along with adding, you know, being that we have two great tight ends, we can at least use Goddard or Ertz as H-back from time to time and run some pro set, because pro set offense was used in the West Coast offense from back in the day. I mean, I just don't understand why that Peterson's so stubborn. You want everything out the shotgun. It really frustrates me, and that's just my question to you guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Wayne, you got it, man. Thank you. I appreciate that. I would say this, Pat, and, you know, you can fill in, too. I saw a stat talking about how much better Carson Wentz is throwing outside the pocket versus inside the pocket, and the pistol has a lot of actions that would get him outside of the pocket. I do wonder if it is a Doug Peterson mandate, if it's a Jeffrey Lurie mandate, or if it's Carson Wentz's decision. Why is Carson Wentz solely a pocket passer now in a lot of these situations?
Yeah, but what's the matter with him being a pocket passer?
He's not as good at it.
Oh, well, but I do not want Carson Wentz wandering around running downfield. I don't want it, Joe. Alex Smith was a surprisingly good runner.
Yes.
He was. I'm sorry. I don't want my $130 million guy doing it. I don't know. I mean, Lamar Jackson's one thing. Carson Wentz is another. Don't want it. The Eagles should be able to move the ball down the field with him standing there slinging it. All right.
I'll buy that.
But I understand the point. I understand the point is, but the Eagles offense should be plenty good enough the way they run the ball to matriculate the ball down the field. And I would very much hesitate to put him in the line of fire. All right.
610-632-0975 is your phone number to join in. And you want to do that right now because all of your fantasy questions are getting answered. I know that you're in the thick of the postseason right now. And we've got Jim McCormick, ESPN's fantasy expert, coming and joining us coming up next. It's Pat Callahan and Joe Torti right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, Callahan and Torti back here this week in Pro Football. 97.5 The Fanatic, broadcasting live from the Parks Casino Sportsbook in Bensalem, PA. All right, Joey T. I want Kevin to hold on. We're not going to be long, Kevin, I promise. Let's bring this guy on here, Jimmy McCormick from ESPN.com. We're going to talk some fantasy. Get on the phone here. You have a chance to talk to Jim McCormick, for God's sake. 610-632-0975 as the playoffs start here in fantasy football. Jim, I want to thank you for the two Zeke Elliott touchdowns Thursday night. I appreciate that.
There you go. Yeah,
very much.
All right. Thanks to Clapper.
All right. And I just want to get something here. I want to get something. that I tease with these guys is that Michael Fabiano is on NFL Network. He had put out a tweet saying the guy he was playing was short of tight ends. So he, Fabiano, went out and grabbed two tight ends off the waiver wire that he didn't even need.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I am against that kind of aggressive maneuvering. How do you come down on it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a form of espionage, but I mean, I think in the real NFL, you got teams blocking waivers and, you know, doing whatever they can. You got smart teams trading for Jadeveon Clowney. You got other teams doing stuff like the Eagles. But in any case, I'm a fan of it. I've already talked to Joe about this. Like, I'm a fan of coaching defenses right now, picking up anything. I had a matchup one time. My friend didn't pick up a good defense. I just kept adding defenses. Maybe it's a moral failing in us, but I agree with Joe on this one.
See, you two both are guilty of a serious moral failing, and we didn't need to talk about this controversy to confirm that. But I mean, you're not talking about the NFL. You're not talking about multi-millions of dollars. You're talking about a friend of yours. And I just, my concern is that, you know, I mean, as competitive as I am, if somebody was doing that to me, man, I'd be hard for me to just say, all right, well, that's great. He's just being, that's really funny that he did that. I don't know. I think it could really get in the way.
Fantasies, I guess, you know?
So to follow up, Jim, I've been forced to see if there's a line where my debauchery would stop. And
sure.
I think where it would stop is the move that you always hear about is if somebody doesn't have a defense going or it's a really bad defense, that you add every defense in the league and drop them to put them into the waiver pool and stuff like that so they can't get them. Is that your line as well? Will you not do that?
Ooh, I'm not going to lie. I've done that before. But I'm probably, like, my kids probably are keeping too busy to add those waivers every day. But at the same time, it is something like that's a little aggressive. But at the same time, it's a rolling waiver. So this guy's just sitting there, not adding players. Like, I don't know. I know it gets dirty, but, like, in the end, if you're using legal transaction means to do it, then, you know, maybe it's like a Sam Hinkie move. It's a little bit nefarious in terms of, like, what it's doing to the league. But I still kind of ride with it.
You guys are brutal. Bad guys, both of you. All right, 610-632-0975. You want to go home, McCormick? We do have a couple open lines here. But all right, Jim, you got some big games this week as people roll into their playoffs. Are there any guys, take for instance, Kansas City is at New England, San Francisco is at New Orleans, but you have good defenses in those games too. Are there any guys on those teams, star players, that you are actually shying away from?
I don't know about star players, but again, what it does is it takes out that streaming. You know, like usually these are the kind of offenses that can support like extra guys that you want to fold in. That's not the case here. I mean, New Orleans itself really concentrates all its work to a couple guys. Maybe Jared Cook, you know, is a guy who you would have played, maybe won't now because of how good San Francisco is against that position. But yeah, in general, like this whole week, like you're saying, with the weather, like there's not, or just like it's late season, all these over-unders are kind of low. So it is difficult to find that choice matchup, especially when Kansas City's offense is just starting to get together. But I think the biggest thing is trying to figure out which Kansas City running back you want to go with. Is it Darvin Thompson? Is it LeSean McCoy? Because we know Darrell and Damian Williams will be out.
Jim, one of the things that I always am worried about is over-analyzing and things like that. Are there mistakes that you've seen now that we're kind of into the playoffs that keep popping up over and over again with owners that kind of bite them in the butt?
I think sometimes we look at, like, allowance rates, like they're the worst against tight end. Like, sometimes that's true. If you're absolutely the worst this season, I buy that. But I think sometimes we can let that be the decider. Like, you know, like when the matchup rankings color green or red, like we let those things, I think, paint the picture too much because maybe the last month would be more indicative, right? Like, who cares about who covered a tight end in early December if that person else was different, right? So I just think it's like we can over-rely on those simple metrics. In the end, I know it's a trope, but, like, your talent and the guys you trust are going to get you there. Trust, like, not to get all Sixers, but trust your own process. That's what got you here.
Trust the process. Listen to McCormick wandering off into the NBA. Hey, Jim, you and I have talked all season long about the wasteland that is running fantasy running backs.
Yes.
Now you have two more victims now because Chris Carson now is, it looks like Rashad Penny's going to get even more of the carries, and then Nick Chubb being victimized now by Kareem Hunt. Is there anybody that you're really, are any of these guys like a Penny or a Kareem Hunt, somebody you might slip into a lineup for tomorrow?
I think it's possible. I mean, Penny, the thing is, it's just he got so much receiving work. And like you said, there's the fumbling issue with Carson. And it's a trend that's been multi-week now. So I think you could get away with playing both, particularly Penny. And then, you know, these committees start to develop, right? We were trying to figure out the committee in San Francisco. Now it might be Mozart. So you just got to be fluid. Like, I think Darwin Thompson might win some leagues if all of a sudden, like, if he's available. I pick up Darwin Thompson right now. Who knows if, you know, remember 4 or 5 years ago, the Cardinals finally gave the ball to David Johnson and he won championships. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it does happen.
David Johnson. My fourth round draft pick, David Johnson.
Yeah, now a waiver wire member, probably. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Absolutely brutal. And Tevin Coleman, my eighth round pick, Tevin Coleman, another one.
Yeah,
but you pick up a guy like Mostert. You know, he left last week. Oh, I'm going to grab Raheem Mostert. He'll carry two times tomorrow for 7 yards.
A week late,
yeah,
no doubt.
It's just ridiculous anymore.
That's how it works. It's true. Like I said, like, there's not too many available. Maybe a top 30 guy who's going to make you sad probably in the end, like Patrick Laird. Who knows how much Alex, you know, Madison gets involved with Cook being banged up. But yeah, these fringe guys are difficult to trust. But like you said, it's where we are. Like, I would play Benny Snell if Connor ends up being, you know, completely iffy.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Jalen Samuel just, you know, he's gone. I mean, yeah. I don't know what happened to him,
unless
but he's gone.
Catching passes.
I know, it's ridiculous.
He went back to being like a satellite back, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, Jimmy McMack, where does everybody find Jim _ McCormick here so they can lock up on McCormick stuff before the playoffs start?
Yeah, you can find me on ESPN. Like this week, for example, if you're looking for last-minute pickups, I have an article about that. You have the likes of Mostert, James Washington. Ryan Tannehill's been amazing for some reason. Robbie Anderson starting to eat. Those are good matchups right there for all those guys. And also, David Njoku, pick him up if you can, because the Browns have the best tight end schedule to finish the season.
All right. And it's Jim _ McCormick on Twitter, right? I got that
right?
Yeah,
there you go. That's it.
All right, Jimmy. Jim. Thanks a lot, pal. We appreciate it. We're going to keep talking to you. We got a couple more weeks to go. All right. So
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
All right, pal.
Hopefully, everybody wins their playoff game.
All right,
let's go. We'll talk about it next week. Thanks a lot, Jim McCormick. Right. There he is. Before we hit the road, real quick for this break, let's get in Kevin, South Jersey, next on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Kev?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
All right, Kevin. Thanks for holding, pal.
No problem. Anytime. Patience is a virtue, right? Well, I just wanted to kind of add on to what a previous caller had asked about adding different formations and playbooks to the offense, and then what you guys just thought. I want the coach to do those things, and how your offense is good enough to move the ball without doing those things. Well, it's week 13 or 14, and you guys haven't consistently moved the ball at this point. So are you guys really good enough to now be thinking? Isn't it that same stubbornness with Doug Peterson that has you in the position you guys are now, where you guys were supposed to be, you know, the leaders in the forefront of the division, and you guys are clearly not? And all I've heard is that your receivers aren't that great, and some are injured. So shouldn't you do some things with formations, with those wrinkles, with, you know, this personnel to alleviate some of that pressure?
Well, Kevin, I think that, to your point, some of it is the injuries, yeah, but the best coaches and the best teams find ways, no matter who's injured, to find ways to make it happen, make it work and piece it together. So being more creative, more innovative, adding new offense, new wrinkles, new formations, new uses for existing players, I think all of that is certainly valid, and a valid criticism of this year's Eagles team in particular, for sure.
Sheldon. Why is it that, I don't remember which, if it was you or the other gentleman that had said it, but...
Oh, my God, it happened again. Pat, the name is... How come everybody remembers Torty's name? Nobody remembers mine.
That's a good question. I don't know. Sorry, go ahead, Kev.
No, don't worry. I'm sorry about that. Like I'm saying, like, so you basically, you agree with me in that. So he's just saying that it's okay, you guys are good enough to move the ball, but obviously not. You know, I feel like if that's the same kind of thought that I had in this position, you know, with the Ravens, for example, it's a prime example. They utilize their offense to their personnel, to Lamar Jackson. And you would think that, you know, with injuries on your offensive line, with injuries to the receiving corps, with these guys that you guys aren't that, you know, proud of to begin with, and all I've heard is, you know, ball receivers drop the ball. You think that's stuff that you would want to do and want to implement. But, you know, like, it seems like you're still stuck in that 500, you know, mindset.
Well, Kev, sorry, man. Thanks for the phone call. We had to get you in before the break, but first of all, there's no you guys. You know, Pat and I are not the Eagles, but I mean, we said they need to be better. They haven't done a good enough job.
His point is, but yeah, he mentioned the 500 mindset, the fact that they're not doing anything. Yeah, it's like the old thing about insanity. They're not doing anything to to react to the fact the receivers have been hurt or whatever they're doing hasn't been working. You know, and I think there's certainly merit to that.
Sure.
But I think that whole West Coast Andy thing, it limits your ability to do that because it's a very, very, you know, it's a very set offense, the scripted plays and everything else. It kind of, you kind of box yourself in there. And I think this is where, you know, you're seeing some of that. You know?
He's Pat. I'm Joe. We'll be right back with more This Week in Pro Football on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, Callahan and Torty back here to wrap up hour number two of This Week in Pro Football. We still got Sal Pal coming up at 11 o'clock. And then, of course, the dreaded pick segment in the 11 o'clock hour where Joey Torty will reveal his bizarro lock of the year. The one pick that Joe's going to make that you absolutely have to go against.
Guaranteed. Guaranteed go against this one.
All right. How about we do a little NFL preview here? I got to do some homework. Of course, I failed to do it. McCormick was brought to you by Concrete Cutting Systems, one of our loyal sponsors. Appreciate them very much. And how about the Week 14 NFL preview presented by Evolution Energy? All right, here we go. Joe, we touched on some of these games. Let's come back to them again. Baltimore is at Buffalo. You know, Buffalo's only 22nd-ranked rush defense in the NFL. Well, this is not the team that you want to have that number against.
No, not at all when you've got the Ravens who can run it with literally every player. They got receivers running the ball. They got running backs running the ball. And obviously, Lamar Jackson's been running all over people. Michael Vick who? Lamar Jackson doing that damage. That's going to be a great game, though. Looking forward to it.
I'll tell you, somebody is going to lay him out sooner. I don't want it to happen. I'm not advocating it. But sooner or later, he's going to do that spin move, and someone, some Ronnie Lott type, is going to be standing there when he turns his back to a defender, and something terrible is going to happen. So, but anyway, it's all working for Baltimore right now. That's a tough one, 5.5 number there. San Francisco is at New Orleans. You know, I mentioned the Niners. You know, their schedule was remarkably easy at the start of the season. The 49ers were the first eight teams they played. Their record right now is 36-59. The last eight games, the teams they play are 63-32. So, and this is one of them. So I think the 49ers, even though I like them tomorrow. I like them tomorrow in this game. You think?
The thing about this one in particular is that it hurts when you look at the way that the season's gone so far for San Francisco to know that they haven't locked anything up yet.
No.
You could see New Orleans kind of taking a step back after they clinch, or this could be a full-on blowout. I'm surprised at the 2.5 number, actually. So
you think a full-on blowout for New Orleans?
It could be.
I don't think so.
It could be.
I don't think Drew Brees looks... I think Drew Brees and Tom Brady are having off seasons. You know what I mean? I don't think Brees can get the ball downfield anymore. I think he beat the Saints by doing one thing. Just will you someone double cover Michael Thomas? It's so elementary.
It's
I don't even understand it. But anyway, a quick word, Tennessee and Oakland. This game is under the radar this week because of the other primo matchups. But 7-5 Tennessee at 6-6 Oakland. The Raiders look terrible. See how we did that? The Raider music.
It comes right on, yeah.
But Raiders look terrible the last 2 weeks. Can they ride the ship here, Joey?
I don't think so. I like Tennessee. I like their game plan so far. Teams that run and use play action pass usually are pretty good road teams. Oakland was surprised early on in the season with how well they did, but they've kind of slid back down.
I think that's a good point you make there. And, of course, I know you love Ryan Tannehill. You want to pay him $40 million a
year. My favorite, yeah.
That's it. Kansas City at New England. The annual bloodletting between these two teams. New England 7-2 all time versus Andy. You know, but the Patriots offense looking very, very suspect, Joe.
I think this is going to be a dud bowl. Like, we circled this game as being probably the best game of the year. This game's going to stink, I think. I don't like the way
dud
that,
bowl.
I don't like the way that New England's playing, really.
Yeah.
Kansas City's certainly not the juggernaut that we thought. They're a game ahead of all the wild card teams in the AFC. So yeah. I kind of see this one as potentially underwhelming relative to what.
But don't you think there's going to be a game sooner than I've been using and been abusing the term get right? I mean, sooner or later, Patrick Mahomes is going to come back to the NFL, right?
Supposedly.
I mean, he really has been very, very ordinary. You know,
yeah, pedestrian.
Last week, one TD pass, one rushing. Where's four TD Pat Mahomes at? Yeah, you think sooner or later he's going to show up. But it'll be interesting to see if it is tomorrow.
Against that defense.
And then Sunday night, Seattle. Now, that defense, I think that defense feasted on bad teams the first half.
Okay.
They're not as good as advertised.
All right.
And then Seattle at Los Angeles. This is the Rams now basically got a win out because Minnesota's schedule is very easy at the end of the season, even though the Vikings are capable of stumbling. But we talked about it earlier in the show, how it's tough to beat Russell, even in tight games. Is Russell versus Jared too much for the Rams to overcome?
I am amazed that this game's a pick.
It started 2.5 Seattle.
And it's gone all the way down. So it kind of tells you that this is a kind of last stand situation going on for the Rams. And maybe not a great spot for the Seahawks either, considering the battle that they just went through. So I do think that the Rams are going to show some signs of life in this game.
Right.
I actually do.
Appreciate it, Joey.
Yeah, of course.
Appreciate it. All right, that's the NFL preview presented by Evolution Energy. And, of course, the week started off with the Dallas Cowboys losing 31-24. It wasn't that close, Joe.
It got closer late, but that was decided
to Mitchell T. and the Chicago Bears.
That's your favorite quarterback.
I know. Anybody who wears that bear helmet. I'd love to see Tom Brady go to Chicago and see what he looked like in a bear helmet.
Yeah, probably like Rex Grossman. Yeah.
Super Rex.
Super Rex.
There you go. There you go, the Chicago Bears. What's the one play that exemplifies the Chicago Bears? Now, there's lots of them.
So many good
all of them would go back to 85, I guess.
I mean, the Walter Payton run that they show on the
NFL. I wrote it down. The one against Kansas City.
Yep, that's the one.
Yes.
That's the one that jumps out to me for sure. Although, recent history, can't undersell Devin Hester taking back the opening kick of the Super Bowl for a touchdown.
Yeah.
And that being kind of all that the Bears did in that entire game.
I know. Wrecks.
Who do you have?
Well, it's funny. I had the one that you mentioned. I had the Walter Payton one. I guess another one could be Wilbur Marshall's fumble return against the Rams in the 85 title game.
Refrigerator Perry.
But I did write down Super Rex. You remember that same Super Bowl defecating the ball out in one particular snap. And, you know, because that sums up Bears quarterbacks over the last 70 years.
Yeah, that's the truth. Yeah, we've seen that before.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Bears were one you could think of. And then New England, we mentioned them, right? We mentioned the tuck rule. Did we mention
them? We did. And the helmet catch.
And the helmet catch,
yes.
Right. So, yeah, it's funny. And then Buffalo, as an example, there's only one play that would exemplify the Buffalo Bills.
Wide right
is the play. You are right about that.
There we go.
All right, so we'll come back to that because we haven't, in the last hour, there's the Eagles, there's not really one play that, well, there's a couple.
There's two for me.
But for as bad as some of the Eagles' history has been, you can't really think of plays that are downside plays that really typify or identify.
Not many.
Yeah.
Not many.
It's odd, given the fact they've had so many terrible years.
It's just the vomit play.
There you go.
That's not
a bad one.
That's the only
negative. Thank God that never got named.
Exactly.
But you're right. All right, so we got Sal Powell coming up here, Joe. I want to get with him. A lot of things that we could talk about with some of these big games and get his comments on the NFC East.
He's Pat Callahan. I'm Joe Torti. Sal Powell Antonio's coming up next right here on This Week in Pro Football on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.